Welcome to the one show that wanders the world in search of the latest techniques for sales and sales technologies. It's the pilgrim on the 405, that wandering wayfarer who's always looking and asking questions. It's your personal guide to this strange new world of sales in the 21st century. With your host, international sales trainer, Will Crist. So sit back, kick off your shoes, and gather around the campfire as we share some stories live with the pilgrim and his fellow travelers.
And here we are today in this time in Laguna Beach. You know, as I walk up and down the 405, there's a connection to the 133, which takes you right to the beach here in Laguna. And as I look around, there are a lot of business people here. Lots of business people. Some people call them artists. And the reality is that every artist is the CEO of their own business. So I thought it would be really interesting to spend a little time with one of the top artists in Southern California and the country. One of the most sought after artists in the country, also has a gallery right here in Laguna Beach and one in Florida. So I reached out to invite William DeBilson to be with us today. William's going to be in town this weekend and have an opening. So welcome, William.
Well, thank you very much, Will. I appreciate that.
Well, this is going to be an exciting time talking about business and art and all these wonderful things. So tell us a little bit about, about what that means to you. Art is art and business is business. How do they fit?
Well, it's they are two separate things. That's, there's I've been doing this now for 20 years full time. And, there's many gifted, talented artists out there that struggle just to try to make a living what they're doing. So the two crossing to be an artist and also to maintain and keep a business going, sometimes, that's, like I say, two separate things. So fortunately, I've been able to do this for 20 years, and the success I've been able to achieve with that is, I feel very fortunate with that. So I'm not the best at many things in business. The art is something that's a gift, and there's lots of artists out there that have that gift and that talent and just never really get anything going for them. So again, I feel very fortunate that I've been able to combine the two and keep going.
All right, so art is a gift, and then you take that gift and practice, find mentors, find people to help you, get feedback. Art is a gift.
Right.
Now, is your experience of business, is that too a gift?
Well, I think so. I mean, also along with that, the education that, people go through to get their business degrees and that type of thing. I think there's a lot more education maybe involved in being able to be successful in business, where I think art is more something that's God-given, and that's something that, if you are able to spend enough time at it and put your time and once you discover what your gift is and you follow your dream, that's... you don't really have to be a real good, a great businessman to discover that. So I think they're both entirely different, and it's not easy to be successful being an artist. It's in, same like a musician, same like anybody in the music industry, is successful at it. It takes a lot of dedication, a lot of loyalty, some good breaks along the way. And being able to create relationships with people.
Mm-hmm. So talk to me about what... this is a difficult thing to talk about. I mean, how do you sell? I mean, you produce it, you display it, you probably get a lot of feedback from it, but how do you sell your work?
Well, you know, when I first started doing the work, it was, in fact, I had no idea that I'd ever, you know, be an artist as a career. I started painting in my garage about 20 years ago. And I was just at that time, it was just a hobby. And I started putting pieces in my home, and I started getting very positive feedback from friends. And actually, I had a house for sale, people started wanting to buy the art off the walls, and I was invited to do a show. And that's kind of how it all started for me. I had no idea that it would ever turn into what it has today. And so it's about, you know, the first 4 years that I did this, Will, this was like a new life for me. I was in the construction business before that. It was very challenging and all kinds of problems and things that you had to deal with. When I first started doing the art, it was like a whole new world for me. I enjoyed going to work every day. In fact, the first 4 years that I did this, I worked 7 days a week. I opened up my own gallery. I worked in the gallery and kept the gallery open, and, you know, struggled those first 4 years just to try to pay the bills. But every day was, like I say, it wasn't like going to work. It was something I looked forward to. And, you know, I think you have to have that dedication, that loyalty to what you're doing, to have a dream, to have a vision, and, you know, just it's a lot of failures you go through before things start clicking for you. And many people give up on their dream before, and, you know, where maybe right around the corner things are going to open up for them. So fortunately for me, things happened pretty quickly for me. You know, the first 4 years, I was able to make a living off it. Again, up and up, my ups and downs, it was a struggle sometimes to pay the rent, to pay the bills, but it all worked out, and things started multiplying for me, and again, it's been just a wonderful opportunity to be able to do what I'm doing.
Well, now, so today, what would you say? I'm looking for some connections with business for business people who have a product. And so what would you say have been the most successful thing that you've done in terms of selling your product?
Well, when I first got in this business, I didn't know anything about art. I didn't know anything about art history. I didn't know anything about what an artist was, about, nothing about the gallery business, nothing about anything. I had to pick up right from the very beginning and learn it, and, you know, with no background, no education. You know, I'm a self-taught artist. I never took the educational route to get to where I am right now. Like I say, it was a lot of hard work. For me, the first 4 years, I just sold directly out of my own gallery. And then I wasn't real good at knocking at doors and looking for different opportunities to show my work in different galleries. I was a little bit shy about all that. And about after that first 3-4 years, people started coming to me and asking me to show with them in different galleries. Every gallery I'm in, people have come to me and asked me to show with them. So I think you have to have a product that, is viable, that people like. For me, especially in the art world, having your own style, being able to see something that people recognize and know that it's pretty much entire, you know, is different, and people can see it and recognize it, and you've got something that, you know, that a lot of people consider special. So being able to stand apart a little bit from what everybody else is doing and creating your own style, your own signature, again, like many musicians do. You hear a musician Right away, you see a style of music that you can recognize, and you know, you hear it a couple times and you know who it is. It's the same thing in art. If you can create a style that stands out a little bit different and you have something a little bit special, people warm up to it eventually and they see it over and over again. And then, you know, it's kind of, like I say, for me, fortunately, it happened pretty quickly for me. Many artists are, you know, spend 20, 30 years and still struggle, you know, and they've got a wonderful product. So, you know, you do need some breaks along the way. You need a little bit of luck, I think, but you definitely need to put in the dedication and not be flaky with, you know, do what you say you're going to do, be honest and treat people right. And you know, there's lots of key elements to, I think, to be successful in it. But in any product, I think, in any field, if you can stand out from the rest of the crowd a little bit, do something a little extra or special, or what if your product is a little bit different, I think is definitely key to being successful.
Okay. Now, what I've heard from you is very important to have the right product. Product stands out. It's different. I'll bet being passionately involved with it spills over.
Of course, yeah.
And then relationship
you definitely have
is
to
important.
Have a passion for it, I think, is very key. It was for me anyway. Like I say, every day was a day that I actually looked forward to going into work. It was an opportunity to, you know, for the first time to be involved and meet people and kind of people almost put you kind of in a celebrity status that you enjoy. That's a lot of fun. And so I think you've got to enjoy what you do. You got to be passionate about what you do. Find something that, that for many people, you know, following their dreams and be passionate about it and be consistent and follow through and, you know, do what you need to do to, you know, and then don't expect it to come easy. It just doesn't come easy. There's a lot of hard work and dedication involved to get there.
Yeah, I think that's a very significant thing is recognize it's not going to be easy, and given the recession, it's still not easy. It's even more difficult,
especially in times like these when, you know, when you have a product like art, it's not a priority in people's lives. It's not like food where people have to have it. This is, you know, it's a luxury item, and so it's. In times like this, it makes it even tougher to be successful. But again, fortunately for me, I've been able to do this for the last 20 years. I have I've done over 8,000 paintings now, and I have sold those. And you know, so I have a broad clientele, and a large percentage of my the people that buy from me are returning customers, and have two, three, some people have 10 pieces. You know, so.
Yeah.
You know, it's a creating relationship along the way also. I'm sorry, am I breaking up on you, Will?
We're going to visit one of your clients on Thursday at 2 o'clock.
Oh, wonderful.
And we're going to go up there. He's got, remember we talked about, he's got four of your paintings in his office, and his office staff, he's on the East Coast, but his office staff is going to be there, and some of his partners are going to be there to have a good time and get to see the face behind the paintbrush.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be great. Let me just remind you, I'm flying in at 7 o'clock on Thursday. So it'd be if we can do it on Friday.
We'll do it.
That'd be much better.
Absolutely, that'll be fine.
Okay, great. That'd be great.
I'll let them know. Now, tell me a little bit about how did you get into this style, this long, tall person style?
Well, I'm asked that all the time and time again. That's one of the questions that I'm asked over and over again at openings and receptions, and people want to know why the long, tall, skinny figures. When I first started painting, it was all abstract. Again, I had never picked up a paintbrush. I didn't know anything about paint, so it was all experimental. I never went to a class. And so for me to start working with color and just doing abstract pieces, there was a lot of discovery in that, and just like playing as a kid with mud or something, you know, you just go out and work and play and have fun and see what develops. So I did abstract for the first about first 2 years that I was painting, and then I didn't really know art history. I didn't know who artists were, and I began to look at what different artists were doing. And there's an artist, Alberto Giacometti, that many of the people will know and recognize his name. I have to say that he was a great influence on me. I loved his figures. He does a lot of long, tall, skinny sculptures, and that's his signature. And so I did some figures, and they were long and tall and skinny, and that was the fit for me. That was I kind of created my own style with that figure. Again, it stands out. People, when they see it, they know it's me. I guess fortunately, there's about five or six artists out there that have copied this style, but it still stands out, you know, as something different, and people recognize it and see it. A lot of the, there's kind of a series that I do with the figures. There'll be a figure that's standing all alone. There'll be two figures, like a husband and a wife, or someone in a relationship. There'll be, and then I'll have figures with a family that represents family. And it's kind of the stages of life that we go through, that we find ourselves sometimes being alone, sometimes in relationships, sometimes, you know, have families, and sometimes, like myself, you find yourself back alone again. So it kind of evolves, it's a kind of a series of romance and being alone and family and all that. And it's become my signature, and the color. I use a lot of color in my work, it's very recognizable. When people see it, they know, you know, if they see it somewhere, they'll recognize it. And fortunately, I have really good representation throughout the country here, and showing many different galleries. And people, when they walk by and see it, they, you know, the people that know the work instantly recognize it. So that's been a great help.
So one of the things that for you, what I'm picking up, is one of the things for you is to have a distribution around the country.
Yes, at one time I had about 20 different galleries that were representing my work, and through this recession, it's gone down to about 14, 15 different galleries now. A lot of galleries have not been able to make it, and they've had to close their doors. But it keeps me busy. I'm very prolific. I'm able to do a lot of work, but as much distribution as I have out there right now, it's kind of hard to just keep up with everything that I've got going. So it's again, I feel very, very fortunate that I'm in times like these, I'm able to stay busy and still be successful.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, we've got two groups of people out there that are going to find this interesting. One is obviously artists who are going to appreciate hearing from you, startup artists and artists who would know you. And then secondly, there are those people in business, entrepreneurs, who are starting off. And I'd like to hear you talk a little bit more about what that was like going in, staying with your dream, every day, showing up, pounding away, doing what was necessary. Now, you said you enjoyed it, but I want to hear a little bit more about what that meant to stay with it, even when times were rough.
Well, when I... just to go back a little bit, in high school, when I was a child, I was raised in a very small farm town back in Michigan, in Grass Lake, Michigan. There was There was 1,000 people who lived in the town. There was not much culture whatsoever. I had never been to an art gallery. I'd never been to, actually as a child, never even had been to a museum. So I had no background in art and no art history. But when I was about 10, 12 years old, I would have dreams. And it was all about designing. A lot of it was like designing clothes and fashion and everything. So I had, as a very young child, something I recognized that I loved all that type of things of creativity and like I say, in the town that the small farm town that I was raised in, it just, the majority of people just didn't understand that type of thing. So I dressed differently. I was totally different than most of the, my friends. But it was something that I recognized as a very young child, that I had a very creative side, that I loved. I loved architecture. I loved, all that kind of stuff. So, but I had, back then, they didn't recognize and they didn't know what ADD was, but I had a serious case of ADD. I could not pay attention in class. I could not focus. I couldn't, try to study. When I read something, my mind would instantly go elsewhere. And it was just, back then they didn't know what problems like that, what that was. So I just thought I just was just a poor student and didn't care much about education. So I tried going to school. In college, I tried it about 3 different times, and each time it lasted about 2 or 3 weeks, and I just couldn't do it. So I to follow some of the passion that I had for, like, design and things like that required an education, and I just couldn't do it. So I took another route, went and started doing construction, and I was able to design and a little bit into that field, which was created enough where there was some satisfaction, but it was very hard work and it was lots of problems. And so when I started discovering art, and then when I first jumped into this, like I said, I had no idea that it would be able to evolve into what it was. It was a hobby, and I was doing it. I was trying to start another business, and I was selling my art at the swap meet on the weekends to try to get this other business up and going. So I gave up on the other business, and I seen, hey, maybe I can make a living doing this. And so I was driving through Laguna Beach one day. I saw a place that was for rent. It was an upstairs location. It was very affordable, and I had enough money to make the first and last month payment on it. And didn't think about it much, but just jumped into it and decided, I'm going to go for this and see what happens. So it was a real spontaneous decision, and I jumped into it, and I right away got good feedback, and I said I was encouraged by it, and I sold enough pieces that I was able to pay my rent, but I wasn't able to have much money to eat on or anything. It was but it was something that I loved. I found it was like a new life for me. So was like, this was something I discovered almost when I was 40 years old. So it came later in life that my dreams, I kind of unwrapped this gift that I had inside, and didn't even really know it was there. And it opened up an entire different and new life, new social life for me. And I loved every day going into work. It was an opportunity to meet people. And when people, when you get response from people that they love what you're doing and they, encourage you, and it keeps you going. It keeps, keeps your focus going forward. And I got a lot of that, enough of that, that I felt like I can do this. I can make a living doing this. So, that passion and that the dream and the desire, I think, are the key ingredients to going through those difficult times and finding a way to make it work and to make it happen, to make it all, and a lot of people just can't do that. They don't have, you know, they're more careful with their life. They don't want to get caught into a situation that they might lose what they have, or, you know, they're more careful. So they're, you know, it's not for everyone, but those that have a dream, that have that passion, I just, you know, I'm full of encouragement to not, you know, many people don't have the education. They couldn't afford to go to college, or they didn't pursue that route in life, and they feel like, oh, there's not much left for me. But there's all different kinds of, I think, finding what you have inside of you that you love doing, that gives you a drive and a motivation to, you know, finding a field in that what you can, what you love doing, I think is just key to being successful and being happy in what you're doing. So many people, mm-hmm. as we know, that go to work and are miserable every day and hate what they're doing, and you know, that's not a good life to live like that. So it all is worth it in the end, and I think it's God's way of making a struggle in the beginning to make us appreciate it more, and mm-hmm. you know, and have the results that, you know, you might not even have any idea that that would you know, you'd have success in a field that you love doing. So
yeah, yeah, that's wonderful. Listen, you're going to be in town this weekend. Tell us a little bit about what you're going to be doing.
Well, I'm coming in, like I say, tomorrow. I fly in to Long Beach. We have an opening at the gallery this Saturday night, from 7-9. It's on, right downtown in Laguna Beach at, 224 Forest Avenue. It's right in the main street downtown. Most people that know Laguna, know where the gallery is. And, so we'll be there, from 7 to 9, and, would love to, meet some of the people, and it would be great to hear some feedback.
Super. Well, listen, yeah. Listen, Bill, it's wonderful to be with you. So glad, appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule there in Florida to be with us here.
I appreciate it very much.
Pilgrim
I appreciate
Talks.
The opportunity to come on your show, and I look forward to meeting you also.
Yeah, take care. We'll see you then.
Okay, well, thank you.
And now for a word from our sponsor, Sandler Training.
Andrew Smith, a salesperson, is getting ready to walk into the biggest meeting of his life. His sales are way down this year, and so is his confidence. His heart thumps. He can't catch his breath. He should have called Sandler Training first. Sales is a tough business. But Sandler Training uses continual reinforcement with ongoing training and individual coaching. You won't fail because we won't let you. Sandler Training, finding power in reinforcement.
And in Orange County, you can find your local Sandler sales trainer by calling 949-355-6013. That's 949-355-6013.
And now back on the 405, there's lots of businesses in Orange County that are startups. Lots of businesses are small, medium-sized businesses, and there's a good number of large businesses in Orange County. It's very interesting to spend time with startups because there's all that kind of enthusiasm and passion that Bill DeBilzen was talking about. It's a whole different thing to take a company and redo it and restructure it, take it and come up with a vision for where that company should be in a year, 2 years, 3 years, taking a clear look at where it is now, and then beginning to put together that roadmap that has to be true and that has to be executed because people are committed to it and people are depending upon it. It's a whole different set of skills to take a company, restructure it, and move it forward and to help it thrive. And we have today a CEO who specializes in restructuring and helping companies thrive in a very effective and efficient way. You've probably seen one of those 74 Easy Lubes as you drive around. You may have even used it. And if you used it last year, you're going to find that your experience now and in the future is going to be very different, much improved. We have the CEO, the new CEO since April of Easy Lube with us today, Guy Marsala. Welcome, Guy.
Thank you, Will. Happy to be here today.
So tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into Easy Lube and what that's going to mean for us.
Well, I started early in my career after the United States Military Academy. I spent 6 years as an officer in the Army, and great training. And after that, joined a Fortune 500 company, American Hospital Supply Corporation, spent a number of years there, and then PepsiCo for over 11 years. And those experiences in those companies and in the military really taught me some terrific lessons about leadership. I had some great training, great mentors. And what I'm proud of is I've been able to adapt and utilize those skills in other companies, other situations. And I've taken a number of businesses that were broken and helped fix them. And I'm very excited to be working with Easy Lube. It's a terrific company. It's a diamond in the rough. And I think we have a very, very bright future.
Well, so tell us about where Easy Lube is going to be 3 years, 5 years from now.
You know, we're working very hard to become the In-N-Out Burger of the quick lube business. And I say that because we're going to really stand for something in terms of value, convenience, taking great care of the customer, taking great care of our employees in a friendly, professional, courteous way, getting it right the first time. And we've made a lot of progress in the last 10 months or so, and we're not finished. We've got a lot of work to do still, but we're very pleased with the progress we're making. We're very excited about 2011. We've got, Will, 74 company-owned stores. All our stores are company-owned. We have no franchises. They're all in Southern California, from Bakersfield to San Diego. And frankly, we could double that footprint and still not leave Southern California. There's enough great locations out there, and there's enough customers out there for us to operate that way. And of course, we could always expand to the north, or we could expand to the east. The company at one time did have stores in Arizona. There's no reason we couldn't go back into some of those markets in the future. I think we will.
So tell me a little bit about the restructuring here. What does that mean for help an entrepreneur, somebody in a startup, help them understand what does that mean to come in and restructure a company?
Well, Easy Lube was founded in 1988 in Southern California, and it grew very quickly. And there were a number of good things about their growth. But there were also areas that needed to be improved. So as I've come in and brought other new leadership into the company, we're really relaunching the company. It's a great brand. We've got new investors. We've got new leadership, not just myself, but our vice president of marketing, for example, was formerly the number two marketing person at Taco Bell. He's joined us. We're excited about that. We've got a great CFO in Mark Archer. And we're really, I say, relaunching the company in every sense of the word. A new culture of taking great care of the customer, taking great care of our employees. We have a new look in our stores. Excuse me. All of our stores have been refurbished. New paint, new signage, new point-of-sale materials, in some cases new flooring. Externally, there's an outward look that's very visible that something is going on in a positive way with our company. And Yeah, we're very excited about it. It's a lot of hard work, and we've got a lot of dedicated, hardworking employees that are, I'm very proud of the way they are responding to our new direction.
Now, it's a tough question. In a startup, I mean, in a restructure like this, it sounds like many things are like a startup, except when you come in, you have a whole bunch of people. You got 74 stores. You got a lot of people on board, right?
We do. We have close to 1,000 employees. Of course, most of them are out in the stores. And, you know, one of the great things about our footprint, we've got 74 stores, as I said. We bring all of our store managers in for a full-day meeting once a month. They drive in, drive out in the evening. I get to talk to them face-to-face. They get to hear directly from me and talk about our values, how we want to treat the customer, how we want to treat each other. And I think that's very powerful. And that's why, you know, these changes are taking root. We're really not just talking the talk, we're walking the walk. And so I don't know if it's analogous to a startup, but there's definitely some things that are being put in place that are new. But there's also a lot of good things about EasyLube, and we're making sure that we appreciate those and carry those forward as well.
Now, so this is a tough question. When you come into a startup, you have a vision for where you're going to go. As a leader, do you find that there's some people who either can't or don't want to go that place?
Can't or don't want to, what was the question?
Can't or don't want to follow you to that new mountaintop?
Oh, definitely. You know, it's one of the tough things about change management, and that is, you know, once the direction is very clear, we need to all lock arms. We need to all pull on the oars in the same direction. And if that is not happening, we need to sometimes make some tough decisions about people, and we've done that. And not to say that people are bad, but you know, we've got to be aligned, and we've got to all be rowing hard in the same direction.
Mm-hmm. And in my experience, sometimes people can't. I mean, they just don't have the skills that, and they're not going to be able to get those skills in a time that's going to be effective for the company.
That's true. Change is tough.
Yeah,
and I've spent a lot of time driving change and working with people to help them adapt to change. Some people can move through the continuum faster than others. And I'll tell you, some of the things we're doing is a lot of communication meetings with our employees.
Mm-hmm.
Every month when we have the store manager meeting, we also have a all-hands meeting with the corporate staff. And one of the things that I think helps people adapt to change is lots of communication, two-way communication, whereas the senior executives, we're listening to our employees and listening to our customers, as well as providing the direction that we think the company needs.
So where are you in this plan? You started last year in April. Where are you in the restructuring plan?
I think we're well on our way, Will. 2010 was our year of getting our house in order, getting our leadership team set, getting the stores refurbished, getting clear on the direction that we wanted to proceed in. And now 2011 is really our year to execute. And drive relentless execution in the stores and delight every customer, every store, every day, every time, regardless of what the price of oil does. And the price of oil seems to be on the rise, unfortunately. You know, we can control our own destiny and provide a great experience and a great value for our customers.
So how do you grow your business? I understand you could be opening more stores. Those stores have to be profitable. They have to grow themselves individually, right?
Yes, absolutely. We can open more stores, but job one is to get these 74 stores that we have performing at a very, very high level. And those stores can grow simply by attracting more customers, ensuring that those customers have a great experience and want to come back. And we want a customer for life. And we want your car today. We want your next car. We want your spouse's car, your kids, your neighbors, your co-workers, your friends, your relatives. And the more we perform at a high level, the more we're going to earn that business and that repeat business from that customer. We've launched a new marketing campaign, so the word is getting out there about the new Easy Lube. That's bringing in more customers. We've expanded our offering, our product offering, to do more things that the cars need. Expanded our line of oil products from a economic brand of oil all the way up through the blends and the synthetics and the premium oils. So there's a full range of oils for the customer to choose from. And then it's just executing very, very well every store, every day, every time.
Now, I know your marketing people, and I know that they're going to do a very good job of bringing people into the store. What is it that turns that first-time customer into a lifetime customer, into a referral machine for you? I mean, everybody has the same quality of oil, don't they?
I think the oil companies would certainly disagree with that. We use castor oil, which is the number one oil in the world. I think the oils are getting better and better. The engines are getting more and more sophisticated. But I'll tell you one thing. My dad always told me, and I always told my kids, if you don't do anything else to your car, at least change the oil on a regular interval. And it's one of the best things you can do to keep your car performing for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm. So that customer comes in. What is it that brings that customer back?
I think it's the people. Our research tells us it's the experience. People choose us primarily because we're convenient and we're fast and we're friendly and we get it right the first time. And those are the things that our customers are looking for.
Customer service, customer care.
Great customer care. We're in the retail business, and we've got to have that tremendous customer satisfaction every time. You know, one of the things we did last year, we put a customer satisfaction measurement system in place, and this feedback goes right directly to the store. We invite every customer to tell us about their experience at EasyLubeListens.com, and the feedback goes directly to the store in the form of a red, yellow, or green rating. And since we launched that last July, our scores have steadily improved. And I'm happy to say that today, as a chain, we have earned from our customers a green rating. And it's hard to be green on this scale. It's a 5-point scale. And to be green, you have to be 4.5 or better. And it's not hard to be red, because in this 5-point scale, anything less than a 4.0 is red. So it's a tough grading system. But, you know, our people respond very well to the feedback. They're all competitive. They all know who the stores are with the green ratings. They all want to be in the green. And certainly nobody wants to be in the red. And we've got only a handful of stores that are in that red category today. And we're working real hard on them.
So what I'm hearing is that what brings people back, what will grow your business dramatically, is quality customer service.
Absolutely.
Is that right?
Customer service is key. Awful lot of the feedback is about the way people are treated in the store. If they're treated in a friendly, courteous, professional way, if they feel that they can trust what they're being told, that the services are being performed correctly. You know, Will, one of the difficulties with our business is we're doing preventive maintenance to the car. We're not doing repairs. So the cars that come in, by and large, are running fine. You know, they're not smoking, and they're not, the brakes aren't screeching or anything else. So that there really calls for a great deal of trust on the part of the customer to agree to do the services that the manufacturer is recommending, and for us to make sure that we're performing them correctly.
So what I'm hearing is you have to have the right people in your stores who are facing the customers, and they have to know a lot about how to build trust, how to help a customer take care of their car, even if the customer doesn't know how to take care of the car. And then they also have to somehow build enough of a relationship so that customer will come back. Is that right?
That's right. You know, and I realize your show is about blazing new trails and utilizing new technology.
Uh-huh.
But our playbook really isn't new. It's actually a very old one, and it's a very fundamental one.
Uh-huh.
And it's really, truly taking great care of the customer, taking great care of the employees, making sure we get it right the first time. And we're not perfect. If we make a mistake, we'll correct it. But we're trying to be perfect every time.
Well, so tell me how you take care of your employees.
A number of things. One of the biggest things we did last year was we rolled out a health and welfare benefits program for our hourly employees. And this is something they never had before. The company pays most of the premium, but now our hourly workers in the stores have affordable access to medical, dental, and vision care. We've brought back employee recognition programs. We gave out awards at our Christmas luncheon for excellence in customer service, store manager of the year. We also gave an Ironman award for the employee that really, truly went above and beyond. And these, in many cases, were awards that the company had been utilizing in the past, but somewhere along the way, they dropped off and they stopped being utilized, and we brought them back. We've invested, and we are investing, in a lot more training and development for our employees. Well, we're in the process of rolling out a 401k plan. So these are the kinds of things that the employees are seeing, that we're not just talking the talk, we're walking the walk. And they're responding very well. Because they can see and understand that things really are different. Our word is our bond. When we say we're going to do something, we do it. And if we can't do it, we explain to people why we can't do it. But it's all about building that credibility. Just as we're trying to do with our customers, we're doing the same thing with our employees.
Well, I mean, that's marvelous. That's wonderful. I mean, that kind of falls into that mantra of, if you take care of your employees, they'll have a more incentive and a better chance, a higher probability of taking care of your customers.
I really think it's the only sustainable way to get results. You've got to do both. And if we take great care of the employees, and they take great care of the customers, we're going to take great care of the shareholders. That has worked repeatedly, and I'm very confident it's going to work again at Easy Lube.
Well, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Now, how will you know that you have success? How will you know? What are your metrics for success?
Well, we measure a whole number of things. I mentioned the customer satisfaction. We measure the retention, repeat customers. Obviously, we're measuring our sales, our profits. We track very carefully our claims. So if we make a mistake and we have to fix it, that's a very expensive for us, but we will do it, of course. We track that, and we're steadily improving on that. So there's a number of customer metrics. We measure, obviously, the customer count and the traffic in the stores. We also have our employee metrics, and we're measuring turnover and employee satisfaction and those types of things as well.
All right. So what should we be looking for? Now I got to tell you, my producer is sitting here raising his hands up and down, raving about the service that he gets from Lube. He says all
well,
his cars
please
go there,
thank
all of his
him
kids'
very
cars,
much
everybody
for
he can bring to Easy
and,
Lube.
And tell him I appreciate his business very much.
And he says they take you guys check everything, the filters, the belts, everything. And he's really pleased with it. I mean, he wanted to make sure that you knew all of that. Now,
well, that's great to hear. And clearly he gets it. And I think more and more customers get it. We check 19 different things on the cars when they come in. And you know, when they're visible things, it's very easy for the customer to see them and appreciate them. If someone has a tail light out and we check all the lights and we point that out to them, they're very appreciative. They probably didn't know that. And so those types of things are much appreciated by the customers. But some of the things we check are not as obvious. But it's based on the manufacturer's recommendation. Many people, their car is their second most valuable possession. There's a real love affair, especially in Southern California, with people's cars. It's your baby, if you will. And the things we do really help people take great care of their car. We understand that, and we're trying to help them extend the life of their car, extend the life of their tires, help their car perform better, extend the engine life, help them get better gas mileage, help them operate a car in a more environmentally friendly way, and all those types of things.
Well, this has been wonderful. I mean, this is going to be really exciting. We're looking forward to see Easy Lube as a success, a bigger success than it is right now.
Well, Will, you're like all about helping those road warriors out there,
yeah.
And that's what we're about, too. We literally are trying to help those road warriors extend the life of their car and take better care of their car. And I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you about Easy Lube.
Great. Now, tell us a little bit before you leave. If you had a microphone and a minute, what would you like to say to business owners in Orange County?
Better times are coming. Hang in there. We appreciate your business. And we look forward to 2011 and beyond.
That's wonderful. All right. Well, thanks, Guy, for being with us. We look forward to seeing you around. And we know that customer care is going to be one of the top issues at Easy Lube.
Thank you, Will. I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show.
Great. Guy, have a great time there in Dallas. We look forward to seeing you when you get back. We're going to have a couple of people to introduce you to.
Thanks very much. Bye.
Well, there you have it. We have artists from Laguna Beach. We have a restructuring expert who is taking on a significant company in Southern California and moving that right up the ladder to improve the customer service, change the physical facilities, improving them all around. People are betting, committing to, looking forward to, not only a survival, but a thrival. They're looking to thrive in this next couple of years. I wonder what it is in your business that will help you to move from surviving to thriving. Take a look at what your goals are. Take a look at what your goals are for the next 10 years. Where do you want to be? Where do you want to be 5 years from now? And what is it that you're going to do in the next 90 days to help you to accomplish that? And as we move out of this recession, as we move through the roadblocks and the obstacles, take a look at your customer service. Take a look at your salespeople. Take a look at your management. Take a look at your sales management. Ask yourself, are we getting all that we can get from our people? Are they being the best that they can be? What are their goals, and how are we helping them accomplish their goals? What I'm discovering on the 405, as I go from door to door talking to people, having coffee, sharing some of the ideas, listening to them, is there are a couple of different kind of companies out there. One kind of company is looking around to see how they can get back to where it was. The probability of them sticking around is not high. Because where it was, no longer exists. So trying to be like it was before is really not possible. The other companies, the ones who will thrive, are the ones that still have the vision, still have the passion, where the leadership, like Bill DeBilzen, are ecstatic about coming to work in the morning, not dragging in, but ecstatic. They have a plan. They have a way to execute that plan. They have measurements, and they're excited about it. And at the same time, there are people who are restructuring, like Guy, and looking forward to what changes can be made to take what is there and make it better. It's not just that it'll produce more money. It's not that it'll just help investors to realize the gain that they were looking forward to. It's also improving the quality of life for the 1,000 people that work for EasyLube. It's helping them build a better future. Those are the kind of things that we do in Orange County. And the more times we do them, the better life we have here. It's not all about money. Money is an important scorecard. And it certainly helps to make the changes move forward. It makes it worthwhile when you look at the bottom line. But the quality of life, those kind of pieces that we look for, when Guy talks about customer care, he knows that his people are going to give good customer care because he's got good employee care and he's taking care of them. So there you have it. That's what the Pilgrim on the 405 is seeing out there. And now I'm going to turn it back over, and we will have a little bit more time before we end, says my producer. He's hard at work over there. This morning, I was spending some time with one of my clients, and we were talking about the difference between management and leadership. And You remember that vision of the dragon that sits on top of the pile of gold? You can see that in Wagner. You can see it in The Lord of the Rings. That whole notion of the dragon that somehow has to be dealt with. So often, what we believe that we're doing is stealing that gold from the dragon. Hoping that the dragon doesn't see us, hoping that we can get in and get out. And what my client and I were talking about was, that's not leadership, that's management. That's hoping to avoid an issue and still profit from it. Leadership means taking that dragon on head on. It means looking at that very thing that we fear, whatever that is, and taking it head on. We wind up with all the gold that the dragon's sitting on, and that's the difference in management and leadership. So, I'm going to leave you with the one idea that as we move through this recession, what we're looking for is strong leaders. At the same time, we're looking to build those strong leaders who are coming up to take over our businesses when we have some other things to do besides run our business. And there you have it from the Pilgrim on the 405. Make it a great day. Make it a great week. Look forward to talking with you next week.
Time for another tip from the Sandler Sales Institute. When you meet prospects, they immediately start to form an opinion of you. How you're dressed, how you speak, your tone of voice, your accent, your body language, and many other factors besides what you actually say. In fact, the verbal area is where the fewest opinions are formed. It's not what you say, but how you say it is especially true. Remember back to the Nixon-Kennedy debates. Those who saw the debate on TV thought Kennedy won, but those who heard it on radio thought Nixon won. The fact is, 93% of people's opinions are formed by the physiology and tonality of a person. Only 7% is based on the actual words coming out of their mouths. Success in selling is a slight edge. Learn to make first impressions lasting impressions. This has been another tip from the Sandler Sales Institute.